position number 11289, rule 3.
Mr. O'Leary, Ring 3. You were going to tell me about what you remembered of the North Africa landings in November 1942.
We were, at the time, had mines fitted to us. And the rest of the flotilla went, and we didn't. We stayed. But within a week or two, we were down there. And my flotilla went in on Blue Beach. That's the port side as you go in.
And which, at Algiers?
Blue Beach, which was the code name at Algiers. Now that was the port side of the docks as you go in. And the crew were telling me it was fairly quiet there. They were convoying barges in, and there was hardly any opposition at all there. And another, the other flotilla went into Iran, and they had quite a lot of stiff opposition there. I have some photographs of them. My mate gave me. There was a curfew on from the minute we got there. 4 o'clock in the day, and you had to be aboard. In the night on deck, you'd have to be very careful not to show a slightest chink of light. Of the Arabs mainly would snipe from up the top there, Casbah. That got better. But we ended up doing 3-day patrols from Algiers to Iran, and the big convoys were coming in then once the big ports were taken, and I'd get a signal at night, and at daybreak I'd find myself ahead of an enormous convoy doing a submarine sweep. Of course, I often used to think what would happen if I dropped a clanger, and we'd end up in the convoy, not in front of it. But it was something a bit boring. Oh, you'd get subcontacts galore. Oh, I'll tell you one interesting thing. Well, we were on our own this particular day, and they called me up from the wireless office. There was a submarine on the surface between us inland and the shore. And it wasn't all that long, you know, after the landings. So he said, challenge him. I used to always have the right rocket, that's part of my job, of the signalling flares, you know, recognition signals. And the oldest lamp signal would change periodically through the day, only the same letter all day. So I flashed and no answer. They were very slack, must have been. And the skipper, well, we have to do something, he said. I said, what are you going to do? Ram it. Well, that would be the end of us. They probably wouldn't mark him very much, but still, I admire him. And then I kept going, all of a sudden, someone picked the lamp up and went, give me a key. Proceed. I gave him the challenge. He gave me the reply. It was ex-French submarine that we had taken over with a French crew and a British one sparker. Now, I should have had a signal, or all ships should have had a signal that there was a submarine would be travelling, say, from Iran to Algiers at such and such a time, and you'd know. Well, when I went to the Corinthian much later, I was doing my pilotage and navigation exam with this officer in his cabin. So he said, you're mainly university lads on the course, you know, the NBDC. So I had a stripe up then, and he said, and the North African, little dribbler. He said, where were you? I used to do the fruit patrols, we used to call them fruit patrols, from Algiers to Iran. I said, I remember one morning, I was there on a destroyer, the Wishart, he said, see? That was one of the old, what we called the B&Ws, one of the American destroyers. I was doing there, out there, he said, in Algiers, in the Wishart. I said, I saw it in harbour there. I said, one morning there, I told him all about this submarine. He said, yes, and I bloody sink him. They sink it. I said, didn't you? Yes, I did. He said, well, no one came up and replied. And he said, no, we hadn't had a signal. And they sank him. Not stupid to get in it. Not stupid from his point of view, but, well, we had to get our, well, I did. I didn't know about this destroyer then. My logbook had to go ashore, be examined thoroughly. If a signal had been sent, I probably would have been hot water, because you had certain times you would go in and put our phones on, and any transmissions to come should come then.
So but it was the HMS Wishart that sank it?
Sank it, yes, and the Wishart had received no signal. It turned out, I think, in the end, that none had been sent, so someone on the base would drop a clanger.
Did you like your time at Gibraltar or not?
Yes, I did. It was lovely for swimming. You know, it wasn't big. You couldn't move around much, but Catalan Bay, and I made friends with the shipwrights who used to come and work in the ship, you know. And their families were gone down the Canary Islands, I think, or London. So they were on their own. And a lot of British workers there as well, see, dockyard workers.
How were they doing for provisions there in Gibraltar?
Well, there's plenty of naval stores. The only trouble was bread, for instance. You could buy, and we would buy a little, like, say, a small French loaf, you know. Red hot, stick them in here, couldn't hold them, and rush back to the ship in the night. Put a big lump of butter on. You weren't short in that respect. Bread was the pushy thing. The time you went down naval stores and just weren't very good, it would go green rapidly. But no complaint otherwise. You could have a decent meal ashore, no problem. I think sheep, duty free. I'll give you a little illustration. There was a shipwright called Louis Bonifiglio, and he was Portuguese actually, when married, so it's a Gibraltarian woman, and lived around Catalan Bay. There was a small village around there of local people. And it was a procession on the sands. It's to do with the Catholic Church, you know. And they used to carry a statue of the Virgin Mary all around the sands and all that. So he invited me and Joe Hughes, who was aboard, to come over for this. Went round there, and we had a lovely meal there in his house where he lived, this man named Harris, who was a Gibraltarian. And we had lovely, gorgeous new potatoes. They had a housekeeper there who used to come over the boat, but there were, God, there were thousands and thousands who'd come in from Spain to work every day there, all out in the night. We had lovely meal with beautiful new potatoes, and it says the housekeeper put them all inside a brazier all around the chest and carried them in. Oh, nice. Yes, I liked it.
What did the attitude of the Spanish civilians seem to be towards the war?
That they were delighted to be coming in there working. You know, they were thrilled. Yes, always have been. Large contingent, thousands and thousands, men and women. And a dockyard, I mean, it's a restricted area, but they had to have them. And
so after you left Gibraltar, you were based in Algiers, were you?
Yes. What they call HMS Anne, well, that was Algiers University, which the Navy took over as a base. See?
HMS Hannibal?
Hannibal, yeah.
What were you supposed to be doing there?
Well, we were doing these three anti-submarine patrols all the time, non-stop, you know. Not necessarily every time. Sometimes we'd be going the other way down Bizerta area, Bourne, Djibouti, Bizerta. We went from there up to Madalena, from Algiers up to Madalena, which was Italian. And then about 5 miles wide straight of Bonifacio, and there was Corsica. We ultimately ended up there with a commander hydrographer, and we went into this lovely little place called Porto Vecchio, and we mapped it out. The crew's job was to the lovely two little wooden piers. When the tide went out, you rested on the sand, you know, and they would row this commander around in our little dinghy, and they'd be sounding it. You couldn't be seen because you came around this headland and there was this deep inlet and a lovely little bay. But the idea was to run a tanker, build up so tankers could come in and discharge into the centre of Corsica, which is, it's like a basin, Corsica, you know, high ground and inside, in the middle, low ground, for aircraft to land there. That was in January. While I was there, in fact. 44 must have been. Yeah, it must be 44. It was the time that Anzio was landings, because I dived down aft to tell the skipper that I'd heard on Morse now.
That was the other landing, see,
and January 23rd, I think it was. And when I went down aft and told them, he and they were having a breakfast, and he and the commander looked at each other and said, "Expected that spark," he said, "so they must have known about it." And we didn't know any. I didn't know. So we spent that period up there. I didn't like it very much there. You were desperately short food. There was no naval base. And we used to go and try and scrounge what you could. It was nice, though. You'd go for a walk. It would be in. Try and swap coffee, you know, cigarettes, soap, prime swapping thing, for food. Now, someone had the bright idea of having this very small lamb. Even for a lamb it was small, and a lot of cork trees there in Corsica, so we have to tie him up every time he moves. You know, we wouldn't be there continually. We'd go down to Marvelina and back up and all that, and we would tie him there, but he never got any fatter. And when finally we had completed the survey, we went back to Bizerta. A terrible storm getting there, but we delighted because for the first time we had no bread. We were even bargaining for flour, and we were making flapjacks, like, you know. Remember having a dinner of tin beetroot? Oh, no potatoes. Tins, anyway, tin stuff now, and flapjacks. So we ate ourselves stupid in Brazil on bread. It's lovely to eat bread. There were terrible storms raged for about 10 days there, and this chap, commander, had to get back. We had to take him then back to Algiers. And once we started, our skipper said, you know, now, commander, he said, once we start, no turning around in this. He said, you'll be over. It was awful. Just to get him back to Algiers, couldn't go by road.
By this time, you were operating from Algiers.
Yes.
Were there far fewer enemy submarines around in the Mediterranean?
By then, they were getting in real trouble, because the Straits now was thoroughly guarded. And one by one, they were knocking them off like nobody's business there. I think submarines ceased to be a problem once the North African coast went, unless the ones operating, of course, on the other side, see? No. Our big problem at the beginning was the RAF. They were coming down and strafing all little boats, and we ended up painting, I think it was the bows, painting the deck from, say, about 6 or 7 feet back, all red, and the same on the stern.
Did that solve the problem?
Yes, it did. and that she was colourblind. That's true.
Did you ever get strapped by the RAF?
No, we didn't. But boats in our flotilla had. Unlucky.
But until you painted it red, how were the RAF supposed to know that you were British?
Well, that was it. You know, there were still German boats around. And, of course, they would make sure and blast everything. And there was quite a few killed. The different flotillas there. So then suddenly we had to paint out, and that ended that problem.
Did you fly the white end sign?
Oh, yes, aye. When you're up there, you can't see no white end sign, can you? You send the bullets from a long way away.
Did you have anything to do with the Sicily landings in July 43?
Yes, but we didn't get actually to Sicily.
What were you supposed to do there?
Go in with the landings and escort boats and that in, and give general cover. But I believe Yankee planes were towing our gliders, troops, and they released them too soon, and they all landed a lot around. They all landed about 5 miles offshore. And I remember the Sirius, the cruiser, picked an enormous amount up. We picked quite a few up. And the funny part of it was, we had to take them back to Algiers, not on into Sicily. Sirius gave us orders for that. All the Red Devils, they were our Red Berry men, weren't they? The glider men. As opposed to a paratrooper.
How many did you pick up, do you think?
Oh, we had about a dozen.
And what 12. Condition were they in?
Delighted they were picked up. But Kirk, oh well. Not exactly complimentary to the American pilots who docked them. He always got a bit of a snarl up, I suppose.
Did you take part in the Salerno landings?
No.